We're blowing the doors wide open on Inside Wealth right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. And now it's time for Winning Business, because nobody has to lose. And yeah, not business as usual anymore. And with us today is Hal Adler, the president of A Great Place to Work Institute, where I'm sure you're familiar with their work. They publish 100 Great Places to Work every year in Fortune magazine. It's one of their feature magazines of the year. And it's amazing how the companies who typically wind up on their list have extraordinary profitability vis-a-vis their peers. So it's not just nice and fun. It's actually winning business. So, Hal, thanks for coming back. And what do you have for us today?
Well, I think I'm going to expand a little bit on this this idea of what's happening at Edward Jones relative to the investment community and relative to kind of harder financial times, and talk a little bit about Jim Weddle, the managing partner there, and his perspective on growth.
Yeah, please, because okay. There are tough times out there, and especially in the brokerage community.
That's right. That's right. There are definite challenges, and it's interesting to note that Edward Jones has a strategy for growth from to 2012 to grow from 10,000 branches or financial advisors, and their model is kind of, you know, one financial advisor per branch, so it's equivalent to the number of branches, to 17,000 by 2012. And I was on a plane on the way to our annual conference this year, where Jim Weddle, the managing partner, was going to had delivered a keynote. And I was thinking a little bit about Edward Jones, and we got to spend a little time with them the day before the conference while in St. Louis. And I happened to pick up the Harvard Business Review that month and was skimming through it, relaxing on the plane, and there was this really terrific article by David Collins about strategy. And the article itself had asked the question, can you say what your strategy is? And it was a little piece on how important it is to be succinct and to drive the strategic thinking and methodology through the organization so everyone gets it, everyone understands. Just so happens, this became a little bit of an Edward Jones case study. So the timing was just excellent. So I read, and I'll quote from the article, Edward Jones aims to grow from 17,000 financial advisors by 2012 from about 10,000 by offering trusted and convenient face-to-face financial advice to conservative individual investors who delegate their financial decisions through a national network of one financial advisor offices. Now, I read that quote specifically because this is their growth strategy, and this is specifically very well chosen word-for-word terminology that is shared across the organization. The article goes on to say that most people in that company, if stopped in the hall, would be able to recite that. I tested my theory a little bit and brought that, or I tested their theory a little bit and brought that into Edward Jones when I went, and sure enough, the people that I spoke with were very, very clear about what that strategy was, what made it distinctive, and how it was going to get done. So in my first conversation with Jim, the question that I wanted to understand was, how do you nearly double an organization that's values-driven and has some very clear core values while keeping that value system? And that's one of the challenges that these great companies and companies on the journey consider as top of mind, which is, how do we grow in a way that scales the culture? How do you grow? How do you get big and stay small? In the case of Edward Jones, it's how do you get bigger still but maintain that set of values? And Jim was extremely clear that it really was and always will be about the values. And he said, if we live those values, if the 10,000 we have now live those values to the extent that we hold them accountable, to the extent that we hold ourselves accountable to, then we're going to get to 17, 27, or 37,000 without a problem. And he went on to recite the values very, very clearly, one by one. He said, number one, our clients' interests come first. And they talked about that, how in a great company, it doesn't always have to be employees first. We hear a lot about the number one companies, the number five companies, putting employees or any company on that list, or great companies, putting employees first. Edward Jones puts the needs of the client first and is very, very clear about that. And it helps them to drive and to operate their business in a way that people in there understand. He talked about, we value working in partnership as a core value, that individuals and their contributions are valued and respected, and that they believe in quality-oriented, long-term investment philosophy. And all sorts of thinking fell out of those values, and we talked about them. But the point was that I'm clear, said Jim, the organization is clear, and it doesn't matter how big we get, those values are going to keep us true to who we are.
Well, that's perfect, because that way, you're right. It's easy
when you're in a high growth mode to have that next incremental person coming in dilute the culture a little bit.
That's right. And you know, the bigger a company gets, the bigger an organization gets, the harder it is for an organization to stay true to that, because of course you've got that dilution, as you say. You've got a bigger scope to manage. You've got more people to help understand and to help resonate, and it's all in the actions of the company. So I said, you know, I asked in the last growth spurt, you know, coming out of the whole .com thing and the internet trading, you know, I imagine that your philosophies were challenged, that your values were challenged, because you have a model, or they do at Edward Jones, that isn't, you know, quick win. It's not a quick win kind of do-it-yourself model. And he spoke to that specific conversation that they had across those years as one of the most important turning points, that everyone in the market was beginning to cater to the self-service, do-it-yourself investor, the guy that was trying to make $1 million overnight, and they held true because their core value, that fourth one that I read, we believe in a quality-oriented, long-term investment philosophy. And regardless of how much pressure they were getting, even from their internal people, they held true. And you fast forward 5 years later, they're the only ones that didn't take that wild ride, but they've had clear and steady growth right through that period. And this is how actions match words, which is, I can't say enough how distinct a quality of a best company that is.
Well, Hal, thank you so much, because what it really comes down to, everybody, is identifying, having absolute certainty what your values are and adhering to them.
Exactly.
As your primary engine.
Exactly right.
Hal, thank you again so much, as always, for your wisdom.
Stu, always a pleasure. Please feel free to reach out anytime.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so the magic word for today is putting values into action. That's not a word. That's about four of them. It's a phrase. But it really is about putting values into action, because we can all talk a big game about values, but sometimes they're a little bit harder to actually put into practice. And with that as a backdrop, I'm really inviting you all to come to InsideWealth.net. That's InsideWealth.net, because we actually have some partners of ours, our referral network, who put their values into practice. A value of a dedication to excellence of service, for communication, for really serving, And we're talking about people like Hutch Ashew over at Pillar Financial, or John Menke at Menke & Associates with employee stock ownership plans for your company, so that your employees can own a slice of the pie, dare I say, to expand it even bigger. You know, J.P. Morgan once said, I'd rather have 1% of $1 million than 100% of $10, or something like that. You get the drill. Come to InsideWealth.net, where, just like Hal Adler is talking about, these people are putting their values, and frankly, they're putting your values into practice. So what better way to do business than to really have it all lined up? Because I think we're all a little bit sick and tired on some profound level of people checking values at the door, not being honest, not being open with fees, with service, with deal creep, with, you know, you name it. All the ways in which people say one thing and do another in business. And we all know that a lot of it, and I think we can all fess up to having experiences this for ourselves as human beings, that when money gets involved, frequently it's easy to go to a place of fear. And it's easy to go to a place of scarcity. And that maybe it's not enough. Or I need to make this financial conquest. Or whatever the thoughts that go into it. And we all know that this happens. We're not always honest. We're not always honest in business dealings. No matter how other ethically, moral, responsible, religious, however we like to define ourselves as good human beings. Behind closed doors, without having a priest or anybody else on the other side for confessional, I think we all know that on a profound level, that abundance thing, it's a challenge for many of us, which is the purpose of why we have this whole show in the first place, is how can we put our values into practice? How can we live a life of abundance that includes the financial and, frankly, blows it away, Because we do know that some of the greatest moments in our lives, you know, whether it's a birth of a child or that amazing run down a ski slope, or maybe it's a ski jump, or maybe it's going off to a foreign country, or whatever these experiences are, a first kiss, whatever it happens to be, money can't buy that. Money cannot buy that. And yeah, we all seem to be, you know, as we talked about in the bowl of stew, you know, where we're wrapped up in this whole kind of, give and take thing with respect to our country, where on this Memorial Day weekend, where on one level, you know, nobody else is living our lives. And so it's so easy for us to go to a place of survivor mode and what's in it for me, and always look to kind of, you know, in all of our transactions and relationships and everything, to kind of have an upper hand or to be in control, or to make sure, you know, somehow it feels so often in life. It feels so often in life that things are zero sum, where either you win or you lose. And if you wind up with less, somebody else is getting more. And then it becomes, not just Edward Jones, but keeping up with the Joneses, and all of that. And it can be really troubling. And especially as we take a look at our country, where, you know, we're at a crossroads, people, don't you? I mean, we do know that. We certainly seem to be going to this, rapidly approaching this election time, which is going to determine not only the future of our country, the future of our world. Not to be overly dramatic about it, but that is, in fact, what is at stake. We know that. And we know that we have these archetypes out there. We have John McCain, who represents some form of security, I guess, on some level. Certainly, he represents militarism, as the best defense being a good offense. He certainly represents, in many ways, a status quo. So and for many of us, there's a comfort in the devil that you know. Even as the approval ratings of the current devil, no, let's call him the president, frankly, are not that high. So even people who identify themselves traditionally as Republicans and who may have voted for him more than once are dissatisfied with the level of integrity and the level of how the values, going back to what Hal was talking about with the winning business segment, going back to how the values are actually put into practice, because they wrap themselves around the flag and as being patriotic. And being patriotic means having a good, strong military and fighting our battles over there so they don't have to fight them over here. And defending our oil interests, because we all know that even beyond our borders, it really comes down to money. And, you know, that's one archetype. We certainly have Hillary Clinton, who, you know, certainly represents on one level something new. She's a woman, in case we haven't noticed, which is sometimes hard to notice because she certainly brings some cojones to the party here. So she's doing her best to play the role of the woman in the man's world, needing to be tough, needing to, you know, I got your back, America, which implies that we are going to be fought here, and we need to have protection from behind because people want to attack us from behind. And I will fight for you, because that also appeals to this older world view of us against them. And it still shines true in our economics, even as we have all these companies out there who are doing what's in their own personal interest in many cases, in terms of the bonus and the stock options and everything else that goes into their wallet, rather than what's in the best interest of our country. So I don't know. Do you think it's in our best interest of our country to be so addicted to drugs? And that's a good thing, so long as they're pharmaceutically prescribed, so they can make profit on it. If it grows out of the ground, then all of a sudden that has to be regulated. So, you know, without making any other comments on that, as to whether they're right or wrong about marijuana or any other kind of pharmaceutical that is, its natural nature can't quite be regulated, it's not really quite the issue. The issue really is, what is in the best interest of our country? And as we think about Memorial Day, why not remember what the premise of this country really is? Of life, liberty, they say pursuit of happiness. I would say let's make it presence of happiness so that the pursuit doesn't always have to be out there. Because for many of us, the pursuit of happiness is really the pursuit of coin. And that is what we've determined our happiness to ultimately be. And we all know on a deep, profound level, there's more than that. And that's what I'm inviting in for this Memorial Day. Is to, in the immortal words of Mufasa in the Lion King, Simba, remember who you are. I'm inviting you to remember who you are. Beyond time and space, beyond this body, and beyond all of the labels and the roles that you identified yourself to be. Because on a profound level, you know you are so much more than that. Until next week, invest in yourself, your passions, your purpose, and your planet.
Join us again same time next week on Talk 910 KNEW. And be sure to visit our website at InsideWealth.net. Subscribe to our podcast, blog, or learn more about Inside Wealth with Stu Zimmerman. Thanks for listening. Talk 910 KNEW.